Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that might feel counterintuitive, like a bird, the nightingale, singing out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted that you could join me today. So how are you feeling as autumn or fall gets underway? It's that time of year when we start thinking about boosting our immune systems against winter colds and flu, isn't it? But what do we really know about our immune system and how to make sure it's working properly? Well, my special guest today has made it his life's work to study the immune system. John Trosdale is Emeritus Professor at the University of Cambridge after heading up their immunology division of the Department of Pathology for 20 years. He's a leading immunologist, a specialist in immunogenetics, and he's written an incredibly thorough and enjoyable book called What the Body Knows, A Guide to the New Science of Our Immune System. We all take our vitamins and supplements to boost our immune system, but it doesn't always protect us, and it isn't that simple. The immune system isn't just a bug destroyer. As John tells us, it's far more complex than that.
It certainly is, JJ. I was astonished myself, and I've been studying the immune system for years. But if you think about it, each Western nation at least spends something like about 3% of their budget on defense. So, and already people think that's too much, you know, about the politics of that. However, if you look at the immune system, you can calculate roughly the investment your body makes in defense. So one way of doing this is to say, how many protein coding genes have you got? How many genes are there in the human genome? And there's around 21,000. Which is astonishing in itself to make a human being out of 21,000 proteins. However, even little tiny little worms have as many genes. But anyway, it's probably all about the control of those genes, which makes
absolutely
a human.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But however, if you think about the investment in the immune system, what you can do is enumerate all the different genes that we think are to do with defense out of those 21,000. And it turns out that we spend something like 15% of our genes, 50% of our genes or more are dedicated or have a function in the immune system, in immune defense. So that's a huge number compared with, as I said, with defensive nations. So already that indicates that we're very complicated, and we value our survival. And we've been interested in for many years then in looking at all the different ways in which the body does defend against infection. And there are genes for the skin, for barriers, this kind of thing, of course, to stop bugs getting in. There are genes for the white cells in the blood. But much more than that, if you look at how defense is distributed around the body, it looks like almost every cell has a kind of defense mechanism, if you like. So the immune system, as I say, is much more complicated than we thought.
So one of the questions that comes to my mind is, has our immune system evolved as the world has, and is it fit for purpose? Because, I mean, we seem to be getting so many issues, autoimmune diseases, you know, type 2 diabetes, you know, all kinds of different autoimmune diseases. And then, you know, there are other things like, I guess, allergies and asthma and stuff like that. So it almost appears like our immune systems aren't really quite working the way they should. But tell me about, you know, what's really going on right now, according to the current understanding, current thinking, which is what your book, What the Body Knows, is all about.
Yes, that's an interesting point because in a way we have the luxury of much less infectious disease in countries like the UK these days. And we must remember that actually once we have clean water and good sanitation, we can hope to have, three score and 10 years of life, hopefully more than that.
Yes.
Without serious infection, and that's a major advance, if you like. The downside is that as we've got rid of some of these really difficult diseases, it appears that there's an increase in, as you say, autoimmunity and allergy. And it's almost as if the immune system is not being conditioned properly. So before, when we used to have and numerous infections in childhood, and also exposure to all kinds of environmental things, and we can maybe get onto those.
Yeah,
It
please, yeah.
looks like because we're not exposed to those things anymore, the immune system is not being conditioned, and it's actually overreacting, if you like. So the immune system is very aggressive. It has to be in order to combat killer infections. So it's very powerful and very aggressive. However, if it's not modulated properly, particularly in childhood, then the consequence of that is it becomes overaggressive and later in life, and you get this inflammation, allergy, autoimmunity, and those conditions are increasing as far as we can see. So that's the idea that it's not being dampened down by exposure to things in the environment or by infection.
So what are the differences then between you say that, if it hasn't been really conditioned, as it were, in childhood, then this is an issue in later life. So what are the differences between today's childhoods and the childhoods of, say, 100 years ago or whatever? I mean, there were issues. In Victorian times, we had all kinds of different kinds of diseases, which we've since, kind of pretty much kicked into touch because of vaccines and because of hygiene, as you've already mentioned. So what is it that's going on here?
Well, yeah. The short answer is we don't really know. But no one really knows why we've got this increase in autoimmunity and allergy. But there are some candidates. We obviously life modern life has changed considerably. Things like cesarean sections, lack of breastfeeding, bottle feeding instead of breastfeeding. Those kind of things have some people suspect may be actually helping, not helping to modulate the immune system properly. Then there is the exposure of children to other children in the playground or on the street. And the idea, one idea is that is this so-called hygiene hypothesis, where we're actually too clean for our own good these days. Now that hypothesis was proposed to explain why we've got this sudden surge in allergy. It's appeared since about the 60s, and there's more and more allergy, and I'm sure the listeners will know about this. Everyone knows someone has got an allergy, and it's in the news almost every week. Someone suffers from sometimes an extreme reaction to a so-called allergen, peanuts or pollen or something. So the hygiene hypothesis was put forward to try to explain that. And the idea was that if you have a family where you have numerous children, then you get exposed to the germs from those children. The youngest children get exposed to those germs, and that conditions their immune system. Now we have smaller families and we have cleaner homes. Some of those children are brought up in a clean environment without the exposure, and that may also promote this kind of lack of conditioning. So I think one individual, Carrie Nader, who works in the States, has proposed that there are some things that you could mitigate against these diseases by having in your home, as it were. One is a dog. She proposes that exposure to animals
Yeah.
like dog, for example, is beneficial to children. And then, certainly for things like peanuts, she proposes that you should actually introduce the child to peanuts or peanut butter in the first few months of the once you start weaning. That goes right against the previous advice. The previous advice was not to give children peanuts because they thought it would give, promote allergies. Now the idea is that you tolerize the immune system. You make yourself tolerant to it by giving it early to the child. So that's one thing that she proposes. The other thing, one of the other so-called D's, is these harsh detergents and cleaning the skin so that you have little cracks in the skin. And the idea is that the allergies then come from exposure to, say, peanut dust from the parents or from in the air even through the skin, rather than the eating them. So if you don't eat peanut butter as a child and then you get exposure through the skin, the immune system interprets that as something that to be feared, and sometimes in some individuals there's a strong reaction. Of course, the hygiene hypothesis, we mustn't take that too literally, because it's
No.
now thought that that's maybe not the case. So people then was decided, oh well, maybe homes are too clean, and I think in some respects they may be, and it's good to let children, put the fingers in their mouth and knock around in the street, and harmless dirt is fine.
Yeah.
But I think that's too simplistic. And now the current idea is the so-called old friends hypothesis. And this idea is that actually the kinds of germs that we were exposed to when we were hunter-gatherers in our distant ancestors, they lived in our guts and they modulated the immune system. We don't have those kind of that group of bacteria or those constellations of bacteria in our gut anymore. We tend to have a kind of homogeneous group of bacteria. We're talking about the microbiome here. This is the 3 pounds of bacteria that we all carry around in our guts.
It's amazing, isn't it? 3 pounds
Yeah.
of it. Wow.
Including our poo, of course. But
Yes.
those seem to be important for modulating the immune system. And that's a new kind of finding in the last 20, 30 years. But most research these days is focused on the immune system. So the question comes, how can we help to improve our microbiome? How can we increase the diversity? And the idea here is that we are eating too many kind of foods that, as I say, they're just wheat or some of these crops that are very homogeneous, just too much white bread and bland foods. What we should be doing is eating lots of nuts and berries and actually basically lots of different kinds of foods that actually help to modulate the immune system, certainly in childhood. But there's no reason why we shouldn't continue to do that in adulthood as well. So that's the main thesis these days, that we need a huge variety of different foods. And as you know, many of us in the UK at least actually have these takeaways now, processed foods, which maybe don't supply those kind of varied bacteria that we all need to help modulate the immune system.
Yeah, it's quite astonishing the effect that the gut biome has on our bodies as a whole. And when I'm thinking about clean homes, I personally don't like using too many chemicals because I think that also impacts our immune system.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And if you look at a modern home, if you look at going to a modern house, you can go into that house and you can smell the kind of novel kind of materials that are used, the plastics and the surfaces, and the carpets and all the paints and this kind of thing. And I think that there's a notion, where it's not clear whether it's true or not, but those modern chemicals are also helping to, along with detergents and cleaning products, are actually not really helping in terms of the modulation of the immune system. In fact, they may be helping to kind of expose us to, certainly through the skin, if we have dry skin or, we get exposed to cracks in the skin and over abrasive chemicals in detergents, that might not be helping. That's still controversial, and I'm sure the detergent companies would disagree.
No, they'll disagree with you, absolutely.
However,
However, anecdotally, I find that what you're talking about is absolutely true and makes sense.
But what do I know, eh? Well, we'll hear more from the man who does know a thing or two about this, Professor John Trostel, in a moment. First, it's time to take a short break to hear from our station sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, leading immunologist John Trostel. Listening to John before the break, I was reflecting on how our lives have changed in, say, the last century or so. Homes have central heating now rather than coal fires. Food is processed and prepackaged, quite different to the way we bought and ate food in the post-war 50s and 60s. And while hygiene and cleanliness is important, we seem to have gone a bit overboard in everyday life.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that there's a balance here. You're absolutely right. There's certainly a balance. We obviously need to be wary. We don't want to get infected with dangerous germs, whether that's bacteria or viruses. And we kind of know if there's an epidemic going on, for example, the SARS, COVID-2 epidemic and COVID-19, we know how to protect ourselves, or we should do now with face masks and without touching other individuals. But if there's no epidemic going on at the moment, the question is, in my mind, how should we protect ourselves? Can we go too far?
Yeah.
To live in a sterile situation. And I quote Howard Hughes, who I believe used to walk around with tissue boxes on his feet because he was afraid of germs. We all need, as I mentioned, with the microbiome, we all need germs.
Yeah.
We need healthy germs, and we are surrounded by germs. You cannot clean your home so you remove all germs. They are there, whether you like it or not. There are billions of them on our skin, in our bodies, in our homes. So we've got to be sensible. And I think the balance to be struck is to keep reasonably clean, so we don't leave things like meat out of the fridge for a day or two in a warm environment, because that would actually grow those bacteria. But once we've cooked some food, you can eat it with your hands. There's nothing wrong with that, people get afraid of actually touching food these days.
Yeah.
Actually, even going out and getting some dirt on the hands, good old dirt when they go gardening or something. There's nothing wrong with that, actually. We just got to be careful we don't get infection in a wound, this kind of thing, and that we actually are wary if there is an infection going around.
Absolutely. And I, like some of my friends, if I'm growing stuff, I don't always wash it. If I'm picking sad leaves out of the garden, if they don't have actual dirt on them, and I know that they're, organic, I haven't put any nasty stuff on them, I'll just eat them. I mean, it's like when I go for a walk, I'll pick stuff off bushes and eat that as well, and I know some people throw up their hands in horror and think, well, but you've got to wash it. You've got to wash everything. You never know what's been on it. Well, I don't pick anything that's at ground height that might have... might have had dogs going past. But I think we just try too hard sometimes to be overly careful in terms of what we're taking on board. But then, getting back to our immune systems as they stand today, what is the effect, you think? Because, I said earlier about infectious diseases that we've pretty much almost eradicated. That's partly because of vaccinations. Now, is there a point where we may be going overboard with the vaccinations as well? Is there maybe that, you know, have we created an imbalance there?
Some people would say so, but I think the majority of researchers think that's not the case. Vaccination is incredibly important at saving lives. And I personally feel that we're not going overboard in vaccination. And it's a very, very important tool in order to prevent infection. We've got two major tools, actually, antibiotics and vaccination. Vaccination is important for some killer diseases. I mean, it helps eradicate smallpox, which accounted for, you know, millions of lives. It's helping to eradicate polio, which is not completely gone yet, but that obviously the disfiguration and sometimes death from polio is still same some places in the world. And there's lots of other conditions that where vaccination is actually showing its value. So no, I don't think vaccination is an issue. Some people do, and of course respect their opinion, but in fact the majority of doctors and scientists think that it's an incredibly important tool. But I said the other thing is antibiotics, and antibiotics, again, there's an issue there. They can be abused. And the abuse of antibiotics is such that they, in some countries at least, I think this is actually now not the case so much in the UK, but in some countries you can just get antibiotics over the counter, and people are giving themselves antibiotics for flu and for colds. And these are viruses that cause flu and cold. And the antibiotics have no effect. But what they do is they promote resistance, bacteria that are resistant to those antibiotics. So then you get these multi-drug resistance bacteria, which we haven't got antibiotics to combat. And that is a particular problem, of course, in hospitals. And it's a bit of a scandal worldwide now that we've overabused this important tool.
It does actually upset the gut biome as well, doesn't it? Because you said that we develop these bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics, but also doesn't it just kind of upset the balance generally in our gut
good
flora?
Point. Actually, good point. Actually, if you take a heavy dose of antibiotics for a long time, you're going to kill some of those bacteria.
Yeah.
A large number of those bacteria. So we all know if you take antibiotics, you can feel it in your stomach that you don't feel well for a while. And obviously they're important in saving lives, but most Americans have in childhood 12 different doses of antibiotics throughout childhood, and
wow.
they're not always essential. And so we've got to be careful to use them wisely. We're running out of antibiotics that are effective. We've become a little bit complacent because people thought these are wonder drugs that can, you know, we don't worry about bacteria anymore. But if those bacteria become resistant to antibiotics, then we're running out of the different ones that we can use against infection, and particularly in hospitals.
Yeah. So again, it sounds like it's a question of imbalance again that we've developed over the years. And getting back to the vaccines, I like the story you tell in the book about the origin of the phrase "hair of the dog." That was the original vaccine for rabies. Really? I mean, I just couldn't believe
no,
that.
No, it wasn't.
That,
I didn't mean it was a vaccine.
No, no,
I
know.
Didn't mean the vaccine.
But it comes.
It was a tale that for a hangover.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a way of getting rid of it. I thought that was great. It was giving a little bit of what you got to get over. Yes.
Yeah,
what,
yeah,
yeah. The idea of the vaccine.
That is what a vaccine is. It's a tiny, and people must remember it's a tiny dose, because I think some people don't like the idea of a vaccine because they say, I don't want to put something into my body that it's not used to. But you must remember, when you have a vaccine, you put in an absolutely minute amount of stuff, some protein, into your blood. When you get an infection with flu or a cold or whatever, a virus, you get an absolute ton of protein in you. You know, so it's a tiny amount, and it's incredibly effective.
Yeah, but and sometimes it does actually give you a bit of a dose of what you've been vaccinated against. I remember getting a cholera jab and being very sick, very, very ill for a couple of
Oh, right.
days.
If it's a live vaccine, sometimes that's the case. Yeah,
That was years ago, though.
I had a yellow fever jab, and yeah, that is in order to go to Africa, and that one can be quite nasty.
Yeah, it wasn't so much the yellow fever. I think it was the cholera, and I did get what I considered to be cholera for a couple of days, but
A mild
I
form, hopefully.
that's what we have to go through when we go traveling in these places like Africa. I don't know how many countries in Africa require cholera and yellow fever these days. There are probably still quite a few, but anyway.
Yellow fever, it's not there's not that many actually. I
Well,
don't know
that's
about
good.
cholera, but cholera obviously comes and goes. Some of these diseases are associated with poverty and squalid condition. And we hear about Gaza at the moment, where I think there's this outbreak of polio even, which is we thought that was almost gone. It was in just a couple of countries, I think it was Afghanistan and Pakistan, but now I think it's resurging again, in making a resurgence again in Gaza. And these waterborne diseases are also coming back. So it is a problem where you've got these poverty and squalid conditions, where people are suffering at the moment.
Yeah, and then of course you do have diseases that you can develop immunity to. So, the whole idea of if you've had something, then you develop a lifelong immunity to it. I had hepatitis A when I was a child. Don't ask how I got that, but I did. And it wasn't until some years, I was when I was traveling around Africa and places, I would get a hepatitis A injection until somebody actually told me, well, you've already had it, so you don't need the injection. You've got lifelong immunity, so that was a waste of time. So our immune systems do work in that sense as well.
That's an incredible aspect of immune system, that it can remember for decades what you've had before, and you remember that and come back. That's what the principle of vaccination, in fact, is. It has this memory. It works for all viruses or all bacteria. Some of them, like the COVID-19 one, for example, it doesn't seem to last more than, some months or years. You need another dose. So some of these vaccines, you need several doses before you can, and boosters before you can actually combat the again, another kind of exposure to the virus.
So, what if we just were to maintain a very good immune system? Do we really know what that is? So that we don't have to go down the road of vaccines. It seems to me that what we still haven't worked out is what makes a strong, good immune system and how to maintain it. That's the big question, isn't it?
It is, but I think the problem is there's no perfect system of defense. And we mentioned hunter-gatherers, and we like to think that they had a good varied diet, and they had a strong immune system. However, I think there's good evidence that some of the old diseases, including some parasitic diseases, bacterial and viral diseases, they had those conditions. So they were present there, and they probably suffered quite a bit from those diseases. So I think there's no perfect system. Even if we do vary our diet, we're still going to have some infections. And we're fortunate we've got antibiotics. I mean, my life, I would be dead if I hadn't had antibiotics a couple of times in my life. And possibly with vaccines as well, it saved me and a lot of other people. We must remember that actually 100 years ago, maybe a bit longer, the people had large families because they're expected to lose one or two children from an infectious disease in childhood. My father always tells me he had a sister called Stella, and the two of the boys in the family went out swimming. This was in Hull. They went swimming in a hot tub of some kind, in the industrial kind of. That's where they used to go for in the to swim as kids, and they came back and they gave some into a sister who died. And that was a real tragedy for the
Wow.
family, you know. So
Wow.
we must
Yeah.
remember that we expect to have, if you have a family these days, we expect children to survive longer than the parents, actually.
Yeah.
So I think things have improved considerably. We must bear that in mind. Things have improved dramatically. However, we want perfection, don't we? We want to try to avoid any kind of illness. And there are still some infectious disorders that we must be wary of course, but also, as I say, the allergies and the autoimmunities and the diabetes and this kind of thing still, and cancer, now we're living longer, they're all on the increase. But the immune system, I think, is one weapon that we can use against those, including cancer these days. I think I have, well, I know I have a chapter on cancer.
Do, yeah.
It's clear that the immune system maybe isn't very good at attacking cancer. However, we can boost it, that we can manipulate the immune system to, and nowadays, you may have heard the news stories about melanoma, where something like 40 to 50% of melanoma now can be actually cured with the immune system. So you look at the TV ads these days, and they're talking about cures. You would never have seen that 20 years ago, talking about curing cancer. It's just
Yeah.
incredible. And that is due to, pimping the immune system, the
Yeah.
cells of the immune system, to attack the tumor, attack the tumor.
Fascinating. I love the concept there of pimping the immune system. Time for another short break now, though. Stay tuned for more from Professor John Trosdale right after these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. With me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, the leading immunologist, John Trosdale. Now, before the break, we were talking about how our immune systems aren't so great at tackling cancer. And I asked John why he thought this was.
Because mostly cancer is a disease of the old. And what it's evolved, the immune system is evolved to prevent infections during childhood or later, as it were. No one used to live as long as we have.
That's true.
And
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
cancer is an issue. Apart from childhood leukemias, and there are a few childhood cancers and other cancers that affect some people all the way through life, but these are fairly rare compared with, as we get into 70s and 80s, the incidence of cancer increases, and that's because the cells are dividing, and the more division there is, the more possibility there is for mistakes. And so cancer is a disease of the old. So the immune system hasn't really had to deal with that in the past. And so it's a relatively new disease to the immune system. So it hasn't evolved to work against cancer.
That's fascinating. And you do have a chapter in your book about aging and the immune system. And you talk about fasting and healthy aging and, you know, the impact on our bodies as well as dementia.
That's in the news at the moment, of course. The people want to live longer, and the question is, why don't we live longer? And one problem is the immune system. It has an inbuilt kind of obsolescence, if you like. The thymus actually deteriorates as we get older. So as we get past the age of about 20, the immune system is less efficient at producing new versions of cells that attack germs and cancer. It relies on the previous antibodies and cells that have been built up. And so, in a sense, as we become old and frail, what usually carries us off in the end is an infection. You hear about this in old people's homes, where it's usually infection that in the end. So the immune system actually isn't so good as we get into our 90s and 100s, hopefully, if we get that far. So it's not very good in that situation. What people are doing with fasting, though, it's clear that certainly from in laboratory experiments, that actually if we don't eat too much, then it appears that we seem to live longer. And there are some effects on the immune system. If we actually eat too much, we become obese, and we kind of compromise the immune system somehow. Too much fat, the immune system becomes very sluggish, and you get this inflammation taking place. We haven't really mentioned inflammation.
Oh,
so
no, we haven't, no.
But inflammation is a key part of the immune system.
Mm.
It appears that inflammation is incredibly important. If you get a cut or a graze or whatever, you get inflammation, you get pain, and you get swelling. It's inconvenient, but that's nature taking its course. The immune system is rushing to that wound, and it's clearing it up. And I mentioned in the book, I don't know why people put ice on wounds, because the immune system is really good at increasing the heat and the swelling in order to stop, you know, the infection. And
oh,
what
right,
we put ice on the wound, and I'm never quite sure why. Maybe it's beneficial. But anyway, inflammation is what happens if we get obese, and if we abuse our immune system. And so a lot of people suffer from these diseases, which actually autoimmunity, we've mentioned already, is a kind of inflammation, if you like, which is taking place inappropriately. And so the immune system is firing off, and it's not being modulated properly. And as I say, if we can, by becoming leaner, we can avoid some of that inflammation. It's as if the immune system detects certain situations as if there's an infection, but there's not. And as I say, if we become too obese, then the immune system thinks actually there's some kind of infection, or it interprets it like that. But in fact, there isn't. And so there's inflammation generally in the body, and we start to feel a little bit kind of under the weather, you know. So the idea is that by fasting, we can mitigate against that. Now, some of these new drugs, the fasting drugs that we've heard about, they have been in the news recently, because they were initially developed for type 2 diabetes. But it turns out people taking these drugs are getting thinner. And so
everybody's taking them now, yeah.
Everybody's taking them. I'm not taking them, but anyway, everybody's taking
No, I'm not taking them either.
No. And they actually, remarkably, they actually stop people feeling so hungry. That's the way they work. So people get thinner, and amazingly, they are healthier. And the idea is that because they are modulating their diet, they are feeling much healthier, and they're probably, we think, living longer. So there may be a downside to those drugs. I'm sure there are some side effects, which we probably don't need to mention, but there is a beneficial effect. It's been measured now, people actually feeling much better on those drugs, and dare we say, possibly living longer, less heart attacks, less of the chronic problems. And the other thing I should mention is that, and I mentioned this in the book, that the immune system isn't just for combating infections. It also helps to against heart attacks and cardiovascular disease and stroke, all these kind of things. A healthy immune system helps against those kind of conditions.
Yeah, it's as we said right at the start, it's a complex system, but we could do better at understanding exactly how it works and exactly how it's adapting to our modern lifestyle, I guess. And but I'm fascinated as well by the losing weight, being more healthy, aging kind of correlation there. Talking as somebody who's getting on a bit, and I do intermittent fasting, and I do feel better while I do that. It's obviously uppermost in my mind as I get older, the whole kind of immune system, dementia, weight, all of those things. And I wish I could really get my head around exactly what the perfect recipe would be to be absolutely spot on going forward. But then, of course, I mean, I guess we all have to go at some stage.
We do, but the advice I think our mothers told us was to eat everything in moderation.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Take some exercise, you know, and, you know, don't drink too much. Don't smoke. Well, they didn't say that then. But,
no, they didn't say that then. No,
they didn't say that then. But actually, as I say, everything in moderation. And as you mentioned, the post-war diet, people actually didn't eat any less calories then, apparently. They were probably eating as many or more calories then. But they apparently had healthier food.
Yeah, exactly.
Natural ingredients from the farm, as it were. So there's it's not really my area, but I do mention in the book about, you know, kind of some of the modern foods, the processed foods, which is obviously the very fashionable these days as a kind of factor through the microbiome or through other mechanisms in actually influencing the immune system and our health in general.
Absolutely. And of course, there's no one size fits all. Everybody's different. We all have a different makeup. And I always reference my father, who smoked 60 a day for a great part of his life.
Mm.
And it wasn't lung cancer that got him in the end. It was an infection in his 90s.
Mm.
He had dementia, but it was the infection that took him off. Just, you know, a perfect example of what you're talking about there.
But the other thing about dementia, though, I think it's worth noting that, again, the immune system could be harnessed against things like dementia. In fact, it is being trialled now against Alzheimer's and dementia. If it's caught early, then, again, you can use the immune system. This has been thought about for the last 20, 30 years or so, and now it's just coming to fruition. You can use antibodies. You can make antibodies in the laboratory that will attack those kind of plaques in the brain, the tangles of proteins in the brain, and try to, and those antibodies seem to have an effect of dissolving those plaques. So again, the immune system, I think that's some of the modern benefits of that knowledge, is it can be used against dementia. It's early days, but it will be used against dementia.
Oh, well, that's good news, actually. Yeah, really good news. And so thank you. I think we have to end this conversation now. It's been fascinating speaking with you about a really fascinating subject, something that intrigues me. And your book, again, is What the Body Knows. I do recommend it. It's brilliant. It really goes into some depth into the immune system. It's a proper scientist book, but not written in such a way that you need to be a scientist to understand or read it. So thank you very much for that. And you are at the University of Cambridge?
I am actually now retired. They have a mandatory retirement in the University of Cambridge, which is a good thing and a bad thing. For me, I was enjoying my work and I wanted to stay on, but there's mandatory retirement in order to create space for younger people to come through. So, yeah, that's why I'm actually interested in writing books and doing other things in life.
Brilliant, brilliant. Have you got a website? No.
Well, I'm still using the old websites from the university. I'm still on part of that as an emeritus professor.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of websites, the infectious disease community. So I'll still be on there.
Okay.
I'll be creating another website, I think, after this.
Brilliant. Podcast. Yeah, you should do. You should do and talk more about this sort of stuff. Or maybe we'll speak again about it, because it looks like this is an area which is constantly changing in terms of our knowledge and understanding of it. So hopefully we'll speak again about it soon. But for now, thank you so, so much.
You're very welcome, JJ.
And the book, What the Body Knows, A Guide to the New Science of Our Immune System, is published on October the 22nd this year. It really is a fascinating read and an eye-opener for me anyway. We hear the words immune system bandied about so much, but I'm betting that very few of us are aware of just how complex it is. I look forward to seeing John's website. Meanwhile, you'll be able to find out more about him and his work through the Cambridge University academic website. And on that note, we're at the end of the show. I hope that you found it interesting as much as I have. You can find out more about me and my work at thepracticalalchemist.uk, and while you're there, do subscribe to my newsletter and look me up on social media, including my YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. Also, do take a look at October's Health Triangle magazine for more health news and views. Among the many great articles there, you'll find a piece by me on the health benefits of sunshine, prompted by my interview with Australian decentralised health expert Dr. Max Gull-Haynes some weeks ago. You'll find the link to the magazine on the UK Health Radio homepage. For now, though, thank you for listening. Join me another time here on UK Health Radio for more great guests and more information on how we can transform our well-being naturally. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.